A monastery is a place, and this was a Catholic monastery, where men had dedicated their lives to God, and particularly to a life of prayer. Now, they also, this group of monks also worked. These guys made bricks as part of their labor. They took a vow of prayer, of labor, of, I'm trying to remember for them, poverty and silence. They were a group of Trappist monks who, one thing that's unique about them is this vow of silence. So that for most of the time, they don't speak to one another. Now, fortunately, before I was introduced to this place, well, fortunately, I say for them, the rules got changed slightly, and once a week, they had a community meeting, and during that community meeting, they were allowed to speak to one another. I used to go out there because it was a wonderful place for prayer, for silence, just to get away with God. They had several hundred acres of property, just woods really, and I could walk through the woods and pray and get alone. But because they had people like me come and do retreats, they had to have somebody who would talk to us and tell us where to go and what was okay and where the food was and, you know, when they prayed and stuff. And through that, I met a man named Brother Anthony. And he had been there the first time I went. He had already been there for 25 years, which just seems mind-blowing to me. But I also found out something very interesting about Brother Anthony. He told me two things. One, he really did not like to pray. And yet he had spent 25 years in a place that that's like what they were all about. And the other thing is he hated not to talk. But how interesting, you know, that he would feel called by God to spend his life, and he spent 25 years in this place, and he had these two very interesting qualities. He didn't like to pray, and he loved to talk. But I thought, you know, I guess that really worked out pretty well because of part of the ministry of this monastic order at Ava, they needed one of their members who would take time away from praying and would be willing to talk to people like me who went there. I thought, I think Brother Anthony just typifies something that I'm recognizing more and more with God when he chooses people. And that he chooses us as much for the abilities that we bring to the task as for the abilities we don't bring to the task. And that when God picks people to do his work, he's looking both for what you have and what you don't have to qualify for the particular service that he's going to call you into. I would say God chooses wisely. Now, probably from maybe a human wisdom perspective, it doesn't seem too smart. But clearly, we also know from our experience with God and the Bible, God thinks a little differently than we do. And his wisdom seems often beyond, you know, our ability to really kind of figure out. But I would say he does choose wisely. Today, we're going to look in Luke 1, 26 through 38. I'm not going to read the whole text to start off, but I'll hit parts of it as we go along. And this particular passage really focuses on kind of prophecies that are given both about John the Baptist and his birth and also about Jesus. And we're going to focus on Jesus part of this. It starts out in Luke 1, verse 26 and 27 with Mary. And it says, in the sixth month, and that was the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. And what I want to point out here, and we kind of saw this a little bit last week with Zachariah and Elizabeth, on the one hand, in God's wisdom, he's picking the right person. It's pretty smart to pick a woman when you need a baby to be born, you know? There were two options, only one would work. Mary was one of those that it could work. And the other thing is, too, is she was going to be married very soon, which in terms of the way God operates and in her culture and as part of Israel, that's a very helpful thing. Now, we know at that point, Mary was betrothed, and a betrothal was essentially, it was more than engagement, because it involved a legal commitment to marry that person within their society. And so to break off a betrothal was a huge issue. It was like you had to divorce the person in order to do it. But you were not officially married in that you weren't living together and you weren't having sexual relations. So the fact that Mary was going to be married, that worked out pretty good. The fact that she was a woman, that worked out pretty good. But the other thing that seemed to qualify her, and I would say this is the way God kind of operates, she also lacked a lot of the right stuff that at least we would consider if we were probably choosing a person to fulfill a certain task. And I think that what Mary didn't have was probably just as important to God as what she did have. If you were to think about Mary within the context of her society and culture, she was one of the most powerless people that you could find. And I think most of us, because of the way our culture operates, if we're looking to do like one of the biggest things in the history of the world and of humanity, we're always looking for the powerful people. You know, there are lots of people promoting great things, but we kind of, and I'm not dissing him at all, but we land on Bono, you know, because he's got celebrity status and that makes him powerful. We're always looking for the rich and the famous. And how many of you somewhere or somebody you know somewhere since you've been a follower of Jesus said, man, if Lady Gaga could become a follower of Jesus, wow, how many people would come to Christ, you know? Because we're thinking about who has power and influence and we would choose them to do God's work because we think that's, you know, who's going to get it best done. Well, that's not the way God works. You know, so Mary, some of the things that she had against her, don't throw things at me for this. She was a woman, and women were not highly regarded in her society. It was definitely a man's world. You know, a woman was not allowed to give testimony, legal testimony. Her witness didn't count. She was young. Now, in our culture, youth is good. In their culture, old is good. It means you've been around, you've got experience, you've acquired wisdom, you've been working, you know, all your life. You're probably taking care of a family. Mary had none of those things. She was poor. She came from a poor family. That's not good either. You know, she couldn't bring that much to the table. Now, the next thing I want to mention, although obviously these were going to be, she didn't have a husband and she didn't have any children. Those actually were marks against you in her society. Now, if somebody, you know, a typical person were kind of looking for a woman to bear this child, they'd be looking for someone who's already married and already has children. This is a worthy woman. And Mary had none of those. When we looked at Zechariah, Luke mentions that Zechariah and Elizabeth were both righteous and were blameless according to the law. And he doesn't say anything about Mary's holiness or devotion or devoutness. And Mary was not a religious in the sense, you know, Zacharias was a priest. So he had an official office, you know, within the people of God. Mary had nothing. She's just a girl who was poor, who was unmarried, who was young, and no outstanding holiness, you know, to mark her that was worth mentioning. And yet that's who God chooses. Because I think what we find is that when God chooses a person, and you need to hear this for yourself, you know, let's forget about Mary for a second here. When God chooses a person to do his work, he's going to look for some things that you can bring to bear in the work he's calling you to. And then he's looking for a lot of other things that aren't going to work for you, because then God's going to have to work for you in order to get it done. You know, what don't you have? That's probably a question I want you to ask yourself. We're usually telling you to ask what you have. What don't you have that makes you less capable than the next person to doing some service for God? Probably that is what makes you qualified for the thing that God would have you do. So whatever it is that you usually say, and most of us have a usual, you know, kind of thing. Hey, would you think about hosting a life group? Well, my place is kind of small, you know, and I haven't bought furniture in the last 20 years. It's like, oh, you're probably a good candidate for God, you know. Or, you know, hey, would you be willing to lead this ministry? Well, you know, I dropped out of college my sophomore year. I've never been a manager even at work. Well, I probably can't lead. Uh-oh. You know, you're probably a good candidate. You know that Steve Jobs, you know, one of the founders of Apple Computers and the CEO, you know he dropped out of college after his first year? Never went back, never got that degree? So, you know, what is it about you? No leadership experience, no college, no management. You're over 50. How many of you are over 50? Yeah, there are a few of us. You know, you guys would have a tendency to say, yeah, I've already done it, you know. In God's economy, that is not a disqualifier. God, from the Bible, he likes old people. You know? Here's what I'm seeing and thinking. God chooses who suits his purposes, and he qualifies us, and he will qualify anyone and everyone for the service he chooses you for. And that he's going to choose you based on what you bring to the table and what you don't bring to the table. Paul, the Apostle Paul, he considered himself the least of all the apostles. And we kind of don't get it, because when we read the Bible, we think, God, this guy was like the greatest. I mean, he wrote more, his impact. And he says, but, you know, I was the least of all the apostles. And he brings this up. I persecuted the church. I mean, these other guys, when Jesus called, they first met him, they said yes, went with him. Me, I tried to kill them. I tried to kill people like them, and God would call me. I mean, who's going to believe me? Who's going to, you know, really want me to be doing this? When I think about Paul, just kind of reading, I see that Paul had an incredible intellect. He was passionate and bold, which seems to fit well with the kind of service God called him to. But when I read, he also seems fairly impatient and lacks diplomacy in relationships. And God says, I got my perfect man. I didn't call her ahead of time, but some of you know Donna Bohorich. Donna, are you here today? Yeah, Donna's back there. You know, I was just thinking a couple times, Donna actually led the campaign for a state representative, and he actually won, and has been helping out in politics. And as she's in political circles, people are asking her, you know, what's been your experience, you know, that you would get this? And her answer is, well, I founded a homeschool co-op. Yeah, and she's like, I don't have political experience like you might expect, but I was asked, and so I said yes. And, you know, it's just the way God works. She has a kind of experience. You say, there'd be good leadership there and being able to pull things together, and lacks the kind of experience you think you ought to have in order to do this. I think when I went to seminary, seminary is a graduate school where you learn, you know, the Bible, theology, and it's designed to equip you for vocational ministry. And I don't know what I was thinking at the time, but I chose not to take all the classes, any of the classes that equip you for ministry. So I had no preaching classes. I had no education classes. I took no counseling classes. God must have been laughing about you guys that I would come here, you know, and you get the guy who studied theology in the Bible, but he skipped all the practical things. But, you know, looking back, that's just kind of the way God seems to be. That's the way he works with us. What over the last weeks, months, year, maybe years, and I'm talking to you personally, what over this time have you thought God was asking you to do and you pulled out your disqualifier? And maybe you need to actually put that thing on the table, and it could be part of the package that you bring that God wants for you to do the very thing that he's called you to do. And maybe you need to go back to God and say, let's talk about that again. It's God that makes us competent. And I'm not denying that we bring things that are useful. But what I am saying is we also bring things that are not so useful to the very thing God wants us to do. And that's part of the package that God's looking for. God makes us competent. And with Mary, you know, just choosing her, you know, is part of the competency. He is with her. And the angel says in verse 28, the angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you." Now, we know that Mary's like, wow, what does that mean?